Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, that is a bit of a clip from Chicago Blues Industry, my friend Hamlet Hawk in Iceland. Welcome to Feed Your Head. Tonight, I'm very happy to have Matthew Sloan with me. Matthew is going to reach a subject that some people wonder about and others just are so confused they don't want to hear, but we hope you all want to hear. So, hello, Matthew.
Hi, Roseanne. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm excited about this. We were going to do this before and we had problems with Blog Talk and couldn't get on, so tonight's the night. Now, you can find out more about Matthew at MatthewSloan.com. Also, I must say that you are the author and illustrator of Tully's Garden. Would you want to just, I guess before we get into that, what does the myth of gender mean? Because that's what we're going to talk about. You have a presentation, a page, everything about the myth of gender.
Yeah, good question. So the myth of gender to me is that it has a few pieces. One is that there's a belief that men and women are simply hardwired to be different. And this justifies that we should treat each other differently and have different expectations about what's possible if someone is a man or if someone is a woman. In other words, that our biology is the core deciding factor in who we can and cannot be. Mm-hmm. And that in our society, at least, that the roles for within gender, you basically get two options. You get man or woman. That's all you can choose from, except that you usually don't even get to choose for yourself. You get this choice made for you by a doctor who's looking at your, you know, right in between your legs when you're born.
Exactly.
I'd love to share a little bit too, Ruth, and about why this topic means something to me, because it's more
right.
than just...
Like, how did you get interested in it and go as far as you have with it, instead of just kicking it around with a friend and letting it go? Yeah,
right. It's, I think the easiest piece of my life to share is that there was a point in my life where I got married, and throughout that time, I really was faced with this notion of, it was within myself, I was just confronted by this idea that I wasn't actually a man. And by that I meant that I didn't feel like the ideal man that was being portrayed to me, whether it was the media or in my surroundings in other ways. And so, whereas some people feel like they don't belong in a certain body, that's not exactly what I'm saying. I just felt like I didn't match up to a standard that seemed to be, it just the standard was way too high for me to reach. I noticed that, like, my body even, I've been skinny all my life, and I started feeling ashamed about that, because the ideal man has a pretty big body, or like really well-defined muscles and a large upper body with big biceps and, you know, so forth. I also felt like I didn't match up to what I felt, especially in like watching movie stars being romantic, or how men were with women on the screen. I was like, how come I can't do that? How come I'm not that way? There must be like, there must be something defective about me, because I'm a man, but I'm not able to be the kind of performer that I see them being. And the last piece is just around, oh, were you saying something, Ruthann?
No.
Oh, I got an echo. The last piece is just as a man getting the idea that I should be a provider, I should be the breadwinner. And I typically have struggled with making money in my life. And at the time when I was married, it was a really big struggle for me. I really didn't like the idea of my parents or my wife at the time, her parents helping us out financially. I just felt like I wasn't meeting that standard, and being a provider, or in this case, not being enough of a provider, was another one of those things that had me feeling like I'm just not doing it right. And it was purely a game of shame for me.
Yeah.
Let me pause there for a moment.
But was that these prerequisites or these requirements in your mind, was this from society? Was it from your family? Was it just a combination, like you were talking about the movies?
Yeah, I think it's hard to parse everything out in which came from where, but I have a feeling it's all of the above.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I know that, I can really commend my family for not putting expectations on me in a certain way. It happened that I grew up in a town that had a lot of expectations around men being the providers. So that was a huge influence for me. But yeah, and I think a lot of it was just what I found at school was being accepted or not accepted, and a lot of media as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you were having those issues or talking to yourself about them when you were married, and then what happened to make you explore this further?
Yeah, good question. I actually was very fortunate. I say fortunate, it sounds funny, but my wife and I at the time we got into couples counseling, and the couples counselor recommended for me to go into a men's group as a way to have a different kind of therapy in a group setting and be able to relate to other men. And this was really one of the most profound experiences of my life. I was in it for about 6 years, and every week, it was like a Thursday evening for 2 hours, myself and about seven other men with a facilitator, Daniel Ellenberg, this is in San Francisco, we would meet and basically practice how to be real with each other. And we would get those moments where we'd get to see where we'd trip ourselves up and be putting on an act. And oftentimes we were facing the very act we were trying to ignore, which was the act of being a man, which could be being tough, wanting to compare ourselves to the other men, and therefore keeping people at bay. And having, you know, the challenge of how do I open up to these guys and actually let them see that I'm a real human being with fears and sadness, and even more than that, with joy and these other feelings that I'm holding all back because I'm afraid. Men to men was not it has continued to take me some effort so that I could actually relate to men in a way that included emotions and honesty.
I've that had to be very powerful every week, and for 6 years, you had to become very close, I would think, with these men in the group.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I met some amazing men, which was such a gift for me to get that close to men, and also to realize that I wasn't the only one who was confused about the expectations that were put on us.
That I've known several men who've talked about how they wish that they could, now we're generalizing again, but that they wish that they could be as open with their friends as they've seen their women with other women, because it seems that women are a little more able, and I'm just still generalizing, I know, but to get to the those inner emotions, or at least a bit more.
Yeah.
Because it's expected or just accepted that women will. It's just that whole thing, and that guys will, the guy's best buddy is the guy he goes golfing with every other week.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of thing. And a woman's is the one she's on the phone with every day. So there's a little difference there. But I'm falling into that trap too.
Which trap do you mean?
Well, of just generalizing about men or women.
Oh, okay. Can I help you out with that?
And sure, go for it.
Because I think it's fair to say there's truth in what you're saying. What I would say is when it comes to what we're noticing seems to be true about men, and then what we're noticing about what seems to be true about women, I think it's important to question how much of that is true because
mm-hmm.
there has been a certain training that has had women show up in a certain way and even believe that they have this capability that men don't have, or vice versa.
Right.
So that in the case of emotional relating has typically been thought of as in the domain of women, and it's going to be a lot harder for guys. Just having that notion makes it somewhat true. It's like it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that from the standpoint of human potential, I don't see a limit when it comes to, I mean, I'm a man who has taken some time to get some emotional intelligence, but I know it's possible. So in a way, these things can be broken once there's a hope, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, after your 6 years with the group,
mm-hmm.
there again, you had a chance where you could have said, okay, I get it, and dropped out and never drawn these wonderful pictures, never written about it.
True.
What kept you doing it?
It's interesting. I think my sense is that topics like these, when they're really important to each of us, we each have our own set of topics that keep returning over time.
Yeah.
If we don't pay attention to them, they'll just show up again.
Right.
And so in a way, there were periods where I wasn't thinking actively about the subject. But what's true also is that when I got to the point of writing the book, Tuli's Garden, it was interesting because I was intending for this book to be for men. And even when I went out and I asked people for some reviews, and they wrote some nice testimonials for me to put on the book, and I basically was gearing the whole thing towards what do I want men to know. And that's a beautiful thing in itself. And at the same time, after the book was published, I was hearing from women who were saying basically that they really resonated with my inner experience.
Mm.
And that was so unusual to me. I didn't know that would happen. I hadn't been in a, you know, for lack of a, I guess it's, I was in a men's group. I wasn't in a co-ed group or a mixed group.
Right.
But what I was hearing was, like, I have some of it in front of me. Someone said, this is from a woman who said, the book is geared toward men and their journey, but as a female, I totally relate to many areas of vulnerability and truth. And then someone else said, as well as being relevant to my own inner journey, this is also from a woman, this book offers a stunning insight into the world of men. And what she was saying was, this is someone I actually know, she was aware that it's not just important to understand the inner world of men from the standpoint of so I can understand men around me, but it's also important to see how similar we are on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
That we're all dealing with really similar kind of basic, what I would just call human experience issues.
Right.
So when I had that feedback, I realized there's something going on here. It's not just about men. There's something bigger. And a friend of mine turned me on to a book that took me to another level, which was, it was called Gender Outlaw. And it was written by Kate Bornstein, who is a transgender woman. And she wrote this beautiful account of partially her own experience and her take on our culture. And it just opened up my mind to, wow, there's a whole system at play here. And then there's this extra wisdom coming in from people who have experienced life both as a man and as a woman, which is rare.
Yes. Yeah. Well, one thing I think of when I think about men opening up and becoming more vulnerable and things is that you and I neither of us have two-legged children, but I've known some men who have just been so nourishing and loving parents with their children from the babies right on that society always sort of sits back and looks because they're not used to that. They're used to women. And you always hear women are their nurturers and men are their breadwinners. And so this has been a bad, it's been bad in many ways because there's been a lot of fathers who would have spent more time, bonded more with their children, but because society expected other things, and they, you know, it's like, well, okay, the baby needs to be changed, so here, hand it to your wife.
Right.
That kind of thing. So we've, I mean, both sexes have missed out on a lot by these preconceived ideas. Somehow. But, so, you wrote, now first, did you write the book or did you draw these black and white drawings first?
Oh, in terms of when I created the book, which came first? In this case, I did the illustrations first, but I did two rounds. So I did a round, and this was in about 2007, while I was still in my marriage. I guess I didn't finish the story. I eventually got divorced. and now I'm in a new relationship, which is wonderful because I'm engaged again to it.
Okay.
Coming
well,
back around.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. But to answer your question, so I originally wrote a bit of the story and drew it in 2007 and then didn't feel I actually knew what to do with it. I wasn't ready to share this part of myself publicly. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until about 2011 that I came back to the book. And I was able to feel confident enough to complete it. And I did the drawings. They came first. I knew basically what I wanted to say, but it was really important for me to see what was, I tend to be very word-focused and word-heavy, so when I draw, I also tend to get insights about myself or just feel parts of myself that don't actually have language, and I think that's a big part of the blessing of the project of the book for me was that when it was complete, I had noticed that the words did very well match the images, but the images alone tell a really, I mean, it's, how to say this? It's like describing my own artwork is funny sometimes. It shows people a side of me that I could never explain.
Okay. Well, it has some, and I haven't seen all your artwork by any means, but some of what I saw, it could have been quite sad because it looks like someone who is just alone.
Yeah. That's
and that's
true.
What you were feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sad, I mean, in some ways it's a sad tale of, and I wouldn't be surprised knowing enough men that I do that this is a very common experience. And I also mean to include people of any gender in this, that it's a very common experience to feel like I'm not enough of a man or a woman, or I don't fit in, or there's something wrong with me, or I'm, you know, on a base level, like I'm not that lovable. To have those kind of feelings, I have a feeling that most people can relate to that.
I think so. We're inundated in ways. Years ago, they had a book that came out called Real Men Don't Eat Tish.
Mm-hmm.
And then, sort of as an answer to that, there was the book Real Women Don't Pump Gas. And, you know, both of those are just absolutely ridiculous. But, there were people who believed that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this whole real man, real woman, well, sort of like says who again?
I'd love to share, I think I mentioned like there, I have these this notion of the seven rules of the what I call the gender game.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to share that now as a way to highlight what you're pointing to.
Right. Okay. Let us hear the rules of the gender game.
Okay. So this is a combination of what I got from myself and some of the reading Kate Bornstein and Cordelia Fine, another author of a great book called Delusions of Gender, How Our Minds, Society, and Neurosexism Create Difference. So an amalgamation of these people and myself, the first rule is that, just like Fight Club, you don't acknowledge that it exists. So the first rule is there is no gender game. So the second rule is that anyone who does not choose a gender role, in other words, man or woman, must be punished. And an example of this, what was it, I just saw this in the news yesterday. This was in Ontario, Canada. A transgender male student has allegedly been barred from using the men's toilet at school. 16-year-old James Spencer said he was told by the school to use the facilities at a fast food restaurant down the street.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So this is a punishment for not really fitting with man or woman, and people who are known to have gone from male to female or female to male, there's a suspicion about them often.
That's horrible. I mean, because when somebody's going through that, they have enough on their mind without having their school turn on them.
Yeah. It's true. And that, to be fair, I'm going to give a positive example, which relates to the same context, which is that at Hampshire College, they have these bathroom signs that say, not just men or women, they say self-identified men, and they say self-identified women. That's on the placard.
Wow.
And their philosophy, this is a direct quote from them, Hampshire College expects that all members of our community will let people self-identify their gender and the gender pronouns they use to describe themselves.
Wow.
That's a little more enlightened, right?
Exactly. I mean, that really, you know, gives you a lot of hope. It's like, okay, everybody isn't so backward. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Good for them.
Yeah.
I hope that other schools and other places, whether it's a workplace or whatever, I hope they start coming up with that. Self-identified. Okay.
So you want to hear the next rule?
Yes. Rule number three.
This is number three. Men must dominate women and other men. So this is the notion. I mean, what's a good example of this? When you think of the way people are, will cross-dress, there's a lot more acceptance, actually, for women. I think of Madonna was a great model for me. When I was growing up, I loved Madonna because she was so, it wasn't that she was ambiguous. It was that she had moments of power, and it sometimes looked different than the last moment.
Mm.
And so she would sometimes show up in this very glamorous looking like Marilyn Monroe outfit. And that was one way she expressed herself. And then another time she was wearing a suit. It was an MTV award. She's singing, Express Yourself, and she's wearing a suit, and her backup female vocalists and dancers are also wearing suits, and she totally got away with it. That's interesting. And then you think of someone like Michael Jackson was another model for me in the way he showed up as a male. He was very much a very sensitive being, and aside from, I don't know enough about what happened in his private life. I know it's very interesting to a lot of people. As an entertainer, he shared such a range of expression. You know, in a male body, the kind of heart that he expressed was amazing to me. And yet, you never saw him dress like a woman.
No.
And what's interesting is there seems to be a perception, and I'm willing to be wrong, this is what I think is going on, that it's okay for women to dress like men, because in some ways men are seen as hierarchically those with a little more power. So a woman trying to be like a man can be a little more easily accepted. Like, oh, you're trying to step up. Good. It's almost condescending to see it that way. And then for a man to dress as a woman or to go anywhere near that kind of embodiment is like seen as a step down and like a disgrace to other men.
I think you're right. It's also for women, when they do maybe put on whatever and dress like a man, it's at least by some people thought to be sort of a sexy look.
Mm-hmm.
But for most people, if a man were to start wearing women's clothes or do that, then it doesn't seem so sexy. And that might be with your, you know, a step up and a step down kind of thing.
Yeah.
But what you said is definitely true.
It sort of ups
the woman's, not credibility so much, but it's that tough, strong kind of look or thing that might appeal. Whereas if a man does almost anything, I mean, now people are more used to makeup and all, but that would be something at one point. If a man was wearing any kind of makeup, you know, then he just wasn't really a man.
Yeah.
Unless he was an actor kind of thing.
Right,
yeah.
Or some kind of entertainer. They seem to get away with it, right?
Yeah.
This showed up right around Halloween. I saw an ABC News program that put a hidden camera in a costume shop, and they had an actor that was played, a woman playing the role of a mother with a boy, and then again another clip where an actor, a woman, and her actor, son or daughter, they had another with a boy and one with a girl. And they wanted to see how people would react to them doing, but they were pretending that the child in question wanted to dress in a way that was, you know, almost like cross-dressing for that child.
Wow.
So
okay.
The girl wanted to be Spider-Man.
Hmm.
And the boy wanted to be a princess.
Okay.
Right? So, and it's interesting because, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm immune to my own, what I'm pointing out as like sexist stereotypes. Like, I have a similar reaction where I'm like, it doesn't fit. Like, yeah, the girl should be Spider-Man, but a boy being a princess, I have to really stay conscious to say it's okay. Because
yeah.
A part of me wants to say that just doesn't work. And what was interesting is hearing the moms, they said things like to the mom in question, asking for support from her fellow shoppers, the moms were saying back to her something like, you have to stop it now before it goes too far, or nip it in the bud. And they were genuinely concerned.
Wow.
And to be fair, there was, at the end of the program, one example of a couple, a guy and a girl, who were very supportive of, in this case, they were in the clip with the girl who wanted to be Spider-Man, and just really modeling an openness with, you know, I think your child should dress however they want to dress. This is a part of who they are, and if you want to give them a chance, Halloween is the best chance to, you know, express a part of yourself.
Really? Without being made fun of or something? It's a very good time. Well, I bet that was really interesting, though, to see the different shoppers in the store. And like you said, I mean, they were sincere, saying nip it in the bud.
That tells
you we have a long way to go. I did see the other day a friend pointed out, and I can't tell you where this was, but a young boy, I mean, quite young, he is in school, I think. He might not even be in school yet, but he likes to dress in dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And his father has taken to wearing skirts. And walking down the street with him. So that the isn't that amazing? I mean, good for him. So he doesn't want his kid to be thwarted or to feel ashamed or embarrassed or whatever. And I just thought, wow. So there are people who are becoming more sensitive. And I think that's probably the best thing you can do with your kid. And just like the women in the store, the costume shop, even though this was a TV show and everything, still, you know, they were, that was good. They were exposing people to something that might make them think a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing to do.
No, it's so important.
Yeah.
I love, in that video that you're talking about, I think it was in, it took place in Germany. And one of the things I remembered, which I loved, was the boy saying to his playmates on the playground who were making fun of him, they were making fun of him about both what he was wearing and his dad. And his dad is nearby, but not quite within earshot. And this boy who was wearing the dress said, "You're just jealous because your dad's not willing to dress up in a dress too."
Yeah.
Like, he was really, he felt good about it. He was so proud of himself and his dad, and it was so beautiful.
Right. So, no, we definitely need more of that. I mean, and what does it matter? If your kid is happy dressing however they want?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're still at that stage, though, where we want to shield them.
Yes.
And think that other... you know, like, that's okay at home, but once we go out the door, you've got to do this because otherwise, you know, society's going to come down on you.
Yeah, and sadly, there's truth to that.
I was going to say, and yeah, at this point, it will. But,
yeah.
Okay, on to number four of the gender game here.
Okay. So number four is that women must be objects of desire and submit to male dominance. So this is an easy one to see. You could look at media as an easy context to look in to see that most of what's being sold to women is their beauty or their lack of beauty, and therefore all the products they should get to get up to standard.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, doing that for the sake of and we haven't even talked about sexual orientation that much, but usually the rule has to do with for the sake of looking good to a man.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
This is there's a website that I want to recommend for anyone who's interested in this, including you, Ruthann. It's called everydaysexism.com.
Okay. Everyday sexism.
Yep. And I'm going to read a quote. This is directly related to the pressure that women get from the messages around the gender game of being an object of desire. So this 15-year-old, just 15 years old, this young girl wrote this. She said, "I always feel like if I don't look a certain way, if boys don't think I'm sexy or hot, then I've failed. And it doesn't even matter if I'm a doctor or a writer. Successful women are only considered a success if they are successful and hot, and I worry constantly that I won't be."
Isn't that horrible?
Yeah.
It's we would think that now years and years ago, as you see old movies or read books about way back, I mean, it was, some of these people really stressed that, I mean, the only thing for a girl to do was to find a husband. And she had to do whatever it took to make her attractive enough to snag one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically what it was. I mean, your feelings had nothing, you needed a husband. But now, in the 21st century, to hear a 15-year-old girl say something like that, it's appalling.
It is. Yeah, and to think how, I think these messages are coming in very quickly at a very young age. You know, as soon as people are choosing different clothing or different toys or kids at a very young age, they've done studies where kids know at a very young age which toys are for which. And they've also been disproven that it's a biological imperative. But the rules get around really quickly. And it's very easy for a young girl in kindergarten to know that she has the right to point out to a boy, boys don't dress like princesses, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they start policing each other. And it's not that that's who they are, it's that that's what they've learned. They've learned how to police each other. And it feels like that's part of this, this is the next rule, is that anyone breaking the rules of the gender, of their gender, must be punished. So it needs to be pointed out.
Anyone breaking rules of their gender must be punished.
Yeah.
But okay, so tell me, where are these 5-year-old kindergarten girls learning this? Is this from TV?
I don't know exactly. It only takes, I believe, and so I don't have kids, so I can't say from my own experience. My sense is what happens is there was a study done where they were showing the way a man related to a woman in a commercial, and they showed it to some children, and they asked the children if they would trust the person the man was talking to. And then they did it again, and what they did was they changed what the man said, but they also changed the body language. That's what it was. They changed the body language, but what he said was the same. What kids noticed was the body language. So even when a parent may say, for example, yeah, you can play with a truck as a little girl, that's okay. What's hard for, I think, most of us to realize is that it's not just the words, it's the tone and the posture of the body and all the other parts of what's being communicated that come across. And I think kids pick up on that stuff really quickly.
Okay. Now that makes sense. I just heard, I think today or yesterday, that our eyes pick up of all the signals sent to us, our eyes garner in 70% to 80%. So what you're saying is totally true then. Just even if the parents are trying to say one thing, but if their stance or something shows something else, that's what the kid will get. Okay.
Yeah, and that what that means on some level is that this isn't so quick and easy. You know, if everyone agreed to this right away, that's not the only solution.
Mm-hmm.
It takes, there's a lot of, I think that, I know for me, there's a lot of unconscious stuff that I'm still working out in how I'm still playing the game unconsciously at times. And I, even with knowing that the game exists, it can still happen very easily.
Yeah, I have some questions about that for you, but let's go on then to rule number 6.
Okay. So on the flip side of that, anyone following the rules of their gender, especially very well, must be rewarded. So this is when, we get celebrities are a good example. Brad Pitt plays the male role to the ideal man standard very well, and he's been celebrated for that. And Angelina Jolie plays the female role very well, and she's been celebrated for that. I think there's a danger in there's a danger in celebrating the one-sidedness of this game, because it, in a way it says if you celebrate the man for being strong and resourceful and willful, then, and without celebrating other sides of him, then it implies that he can't be those other things that are really relegated to the domain of women, and vice versa.
Right, so it's limiting.
Yeah, very limiting.
Hmm.
Even if well-intended, you know, people have said to me, I've been in a few workshops, so the language is a little less than everyday language there, but or maybe more than. They'll say something like, "Oh, you're so in touch with your masculine right now, or you seem like you're coming across as such a man." And I don't always know how to respond to that because
right.
I know a part of me is going like, thank you, and oh, I don't, that's not really what I'm going for.
It's not an easy subject, though, because like you, you were in that group for 6 years. You've made quite a study of it, and still you find yourself sort of startled. And then when somebody says something like that, and your first or one of your responses is, well, thank you, and then it's like, whoa, wait a minute, this is just what I'm trying to get away from.
Yeah. It's another example, you know, from my own experiences. I just noticed that walking on the sidewalk, if there is a man walking towards me, I'll have one experience that's different from if a woman is walking towards me. And what I notice is things like, if a woman's walking towards me, even though I'm in a committed relationship, I have thoughts about, is she attractive?
Well,
is she
finally
attractive?
Yeah.
You know, all these kind of things. And I'm assessing her, and sometimes I make eye contact, and I want her to look at me, and I want her to smile, and I want to smile, and it's awkward. And but there's something about sharing the sidewalk, too, that when we get close, I notice, my body may do similar things with regards to a man or as opposed to a woman that I'm passing on the sidewalk. I notice that when I'm letting a woman pass me, I'm making space in a way that feels as though I don't have to. Does that make sense? Like as a man, there's a part of me that believes I have the privilege and I don't have to let her by, but I'm doing so because I'm being a gentleman.
Right, right. That the gentleman, and then if you're walking with women, you walk on the outside, and this, I mean, there's certain rules that we came up with.
Right. Yeah, to protect.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, when you're, as a man, you're walking along the sidewalk and you meet somebody coming. If it's another man, you might not give him as much space.
No, I will give space, but it's true. I probably won't give as much. It's almost like it takes me right back to middle school when I would walk down the halls, and what I learned there was, if you're a guy walking towards a guy, you don't really make room. You often get shoulder-to-shoulder bumps.
Right.
And the stronger one is going to go forward, and the other one's going to get knocked back. And it's almost like a jousting game. Like, and it's like in me somewhere that still rings true, that when I'm walking on the sidewalk, a part of me, if I'm in a really good place, I might just be thinking, like, oh, here's, you know, one of my fellow brothers. Or I could be in that place of feeling really competitive. Like, I have to show that I can dominate this guy because there's some survival instinct, maybe. I don't know what it is. But I have to feel this competitive nature, and I start sizing the guy up from the point of, if it came down to a fight, what would happen?
Wow. Okay. And you don't feel that then when a woman's approaching, but in fact you may move over a little bit just to make sure that you don't bump into her.
Yeah,
or that
absolutely.
She doesn't, because we're not supposed to touch. It's different if you touch, you know, I mean, unless the street is so busy and everybody's jostling each other.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's, to me this is a metaphor for how much space I'm giving someone else. And what my relationship is to my right to encroach on their space and what that means to me.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of things, you can go into levels on. But, okay, number 7 here of the gender.
Number 7. This one is somewhat like the first one, that these rules must never be altered or questioned.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to read a quote from the woman I mentioned earlier, Kate Bornstein. Her book is Gender Outlawed, subtitled On Men, Women, and the Rest of Us. She says, I've come to see the gender system created by this culture as a particularly malevolent and divisive construct, made all the more dangerous by the seeming inability of the culture to question gender, its own creation.
Would you read that again, please, Matthew?
Yeah, sure. Kate says, I've come to see the gender system created by this culture as a particularly malevolent and divisive construct, made all the more dangerous by the seeming inability of the culture to question gender, its own creation.
Okay, right now we're at a place in our society where nothing is supposed to be questioned.
Yes.
It seems people have been dumbed down just to the point where they, no, you don't make waves, you don't question anything. So to me, this makes great sense that would be one of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what's great, though? This is where I think this is part of what I'm hoping I can be a part of. Not here yet, but there's something about humor that totally changes the game to me. I don't have all my jokes lined up about this topic, but there are people who are doing this, like Ellen DeGeneres. She was making fun of this, that Bic came out with this new pen, and it was the Cristal for Her ball pen. And so on Amazon, there were all these reviews. One person said, they were completely making fun of this. This is completely sexist, but they were playing along to poke fun. This person wrote, my little brother turned into a unicorn after I lent him one. Like, how ridiculous is this, that there's a pen designed for a woman? Ellen DeGeneres says, can you believe this? We've been using man pens all this time.
No, humor definitely has a large place
mm-hmm.
in life. And in this, I'm sure, yeah.
All of these, now, by the way, a lot of these links that I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
these quotes and these sites, a lot of these I have, I just took them from my own Facebook page. So there's a lot of resource there. It's facebook.com/themythofgender.
Right, The Myth of Gender on Facebook. Go there, get things. And also, Matthew's website. Site, which is MatthewSloan.com. And I wanted to ask you, you say that we're not yet ready to end the war between the sexes?
Yeah.
Why is that, and what can we do about it?
Yeah. Well, it seems like there's, because, let me say it this way. I know that much of my life, and still to this day, there's a way that I identify as a male, as a man. That's how I have my self-identity is so wrapped up in being a man that if you took out being a man, it would actually be somewhat hard for me to orient right away, which could be a good thing. but I think there's so much of the gender game rules that say you have to be one or the other, and as a result, part of knowing if you're fitting in, which is something most of us want to do as a measure of safety, I want to fit in. When I come into a crowd, I want people to know that I'm this, or I need to know who they are. And part of knowing who you are, in this case of man or woman, because the gender game says, especially men, don't be, you can be men, but you can't be women, and vice versa, it's like gathering information to size up, you know, for me it would be, I want to know everything there is to know about what it means to be a woman so that I don't be that, because that would be a bad thing. And in this wake of looking for all these differences, like, okay, women are this way, so I can't be that way, and women are looking at men, this is how men are, so I shouldn't be this way according to the gender game rules. Doing all that sizing up creates this even wider gap of a stereotype that, in a way, it's like, well, we're holding the myth that men and women are so different, we're proving ourselves right by seeking out the differences. And it's this kind of divide that creates or keeps or sustains that battle between the sexes. So the longer we're engaged in the gender game, the less of a chance, you know, the more we're saying, well, women are like this, even if we're saying women are to be celebrated or men are to be celebrated because of this, it's still about differences. And
right.
as I noticed in the writing of the book and the inner world realization that men and women and transgender and intersex people are all human beings, and we're so much more similar than we realize when you look at our human experience, especially on the inside. So this, if the battle of the sexes is to be ended, it's, I believe, going to happen through people sharing what's really true inside them and people getting to see how similar we actually are to one another, which dissolves the stereotype that really is, it really needs the difference to be strengthened.
Right. Well, so, but how do we go about that? What do we do with young children now? I mean, how can we go about instead of waiting until someone is, you know, 20 years old or 25 and helping them find a group, what can we do now with the youngsters?
Yeah, I wanted to get a really good answer to this because I knew it was going to come up. I spoke to my friend Kieran Giand, who is a coach who coaches parents.
Mm.
And so she and I developed, this is really her answers, and I did a little wordsmithing, but this is really from her. There are three main things that she said were really important principles in terms of how to relate to your children. And the first thing is that parents need to know themselves in the moment so that they can understand whether or not they're actually projecting a part of themselves onto their child. She named a resource for people interested. This is by Dr. Daniel Siegel, a book called Parenting from the Inside Out. And it directly relates to what can happen with projections and how to avoid that. The other piece is talking to children in a non-corrective and non-authoritative language. So I think there's a way that parents, and I'm sure I'm going to fall into this when I'm a parent, can almost believe that they know what's best, and that's part of knowing what's best is, from a gender perspective, what's best for a boy and what's best for a girl. Another way to change that relationship is noticing the authority style of communication. And for this, she recommended another book called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool, huh? And then the third thing is, you could see these working well in different contexts. This one is just basically about embracing impermanence. So what Kieran says is that, in a way, it's like every day a new child emerges. So even in, you know, if you have a daughter, every day that daughter is a different person. And just because they're obsessed with princesses or they're obsessed with fire trucks, it doesn't mean that that's going to be their interest tomorrow, in a month, in 10 years. And it generally doesn't have a lot of meaning except for the meaning you give it, which is back to the projecting. So it's
okay.
Really about being present.
Embracing what?
Embracing impermanence.
Impermanence, okay. Right.
Yeah.
So totally in the now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if this would have been helpful for the parents in the Halloween store, the costume store, you know, if little Johnny wants to wear a princess outfit for Halloween, and that's something that's who he is today, that's not necessarily who he is tomorrow, but even if it is, you get to be with him tomorrow, and then he can be that tomorrow in 3 years or whatever. It's day by day as opposed to worrying about the future, just being with the children in the moment.
Right, as opposed to nipping it in the bud.
Right.
Because down the road, just then that might happen, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Matthew, what do you think about the future? I mean, I would think that we're slowly making progress, but...
Yeah.
What would you say you would see for, just say, 30 years down the road in this area?
Yeah. Great question. So I'll say it as it's the kind of world I would live in. where, you know, what I didn't quite get as a young human, in this case, it's that we can relate to each other fundamentally as fellow human beings, that being a man or a woman is a part of being a human being, but isn't the end-all be-all of who one is, which includes people who have mixed anatomy. It's a world where, you know, you can walk through the halls of your school and not be worried that if you're, I'm going to use the binary system for now to make the point, but you'll see that it's it can get confusing quickly. If you're a girl walking down the hall in school, you're not going to have the situation where other girls are going to look at you and assess you based on what you're wearing or what you've done with your hair or your makeup. And instead that people are just able to relate to each other because we do know now, like it could become common sense that people understand that on the inside we're all the same. So there isn't really that much point in poking fun at the wrapper, you know, that's the body or the clothing. Like
right.
it's pointless because, you know, another way to think of this world we're moving into is that we really understand that when I look at someone and I have a judgment, first and foremost, that tells us more about the person making the judgment than the person they're judging, and they can learn from that. And then it actually comes down to, I think, something like karma, where if, you know, I actually have, I did bully a young girl. I wasn't violent, but I verbally, I would say, bullied a young girl. And there's a way that that hurts me now. You know, it really hurts a core part of me to really acknowledge that that's in my past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to happen faster, where people are going to be able to feel what it is like for someone else if it does come down to a moment of something like bullying or punishing from the gender game standpoint. The impact of it will be felt, and it'll be obvious on some level that you know, you get what you put out there. So be careful.
Yeah, I think that's right. It will come faster because the world is speeding up, and that makes sense. We only have 2 minutes, and I have a question. Is any country ahead of the others in this area that you've found or noticed?
Yeah. The only, I don't know a lot about other countries. What I do know is that, for example, in Sweden, there's a private school, and in the Swedish language, they have a gender-neutral pronoun, but not everyone's adopted it. This private school in Sweden has adopted it, and what they're trying to do with the kids is very consciously equally treat them the same way. So if they've noticed that, you know, when a boy skins his knee, they're going to very consciously make sure that they're giving the same kind of comfort to the boy that they would a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's that kind of awareness that from a very young age, we don't know what that will produce, but there's at least a consciousness about it that I think is very healthy.
You know, that's really interesting. I mean, it will be fun to read some reports coming out of that when the kids have a little more age on them.
Mm-hmm.
To see
yeah.
what. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that question, it just came to me when you were talking. I was thinking, well, the United States isn't always real advanced in these things.
Right.
We know some countries are much more backward, but on this, but okay, so it was Sweden, Scandinavian countries, and a lot of things, they seem to be right up there. So that would make sense, at least for that particular private school. But
yeah.
Matthew, your book, which was published in November of 2011, is Cooley's Garden. And your website is MatthewSloan.com, where people can find out all kinds of things. Also, The Myth of Gender on Facebook. And that's the name of your presentation. And you have a 5-minute piece of that on your page. And it's very good. So thank you so much for coming on. And we could have gone on, but our time is up. So Well, have a nice weekend and a lovely holiday coming up.
Yeah, and thank you, Sandy, too.
Yeah, I hope to have you back. So,
absolutely,
thank you.
I'd love to come back.
Okay, bye-bye. Good night.
All right, bye-bye.